Whatever prompted life to begin, it happened just once. That is the most extraordinary fact in biology. Perhaps the most extraordinary fact we know. Everything that has ever lived, plant or animal, dates its beginnings from the same primordial twitch. At some point in an unimaginably distant past, some little bag of chemicals fidgeted to life. It absorbed some nutrients, gently pulsed, had a brief existence. This much may have happened before, perhaps many times, but this ancestral packet did something additional and extraordinary. It cleaved itself and produced an heir. A tiny bundle of genetic material passed from one living entity to another, and has never stopped moving since. It was the moment of creation for us all. Biologists sometimes call it the Big Birth. Wherever you go in the world, whatever animal, plant, bug, or blob you look at, if it is alive, it will use the same dictionary and know the same code. All life is one, says Matt Ridley. We are all the result of a single genetic trick handed down from generation to generation nearly 4 billion years, to such an extent that you can take a fragment of human genetic instruction, patch it into a faulty yeast cell, and the yeast cell will put it to work as if it were its own. In a very real sense, it is its own. The Dawn of Life, or something very like it, sits on a shelf in the office of a friendly isotope geochemist named Victoria Bennett in the Earth Sciences Building of the Australian National University in Canberra. An American, Ms. Bennett came to the ANU from California on a 2-year contract in 1989 and has been there ever since. When I visited her, in late 2001, she handed me a modestly hefty hunk of rock composed of thin, alternating stripes of white quartz and a grey-green material called clinopyroxene. The rock came from Achillea Island in Greenland, where unusually ancient rocks were found in 1997. The rocks are 3.85 billion years old and represent the oldest marine sediments ever found. We can't be certain that what you are holding once contained living organisms, because you'd have to pulverize it to find out, Bennett told me. But it comes from the same deposit where the oldest life was excavated, so it probably had life in it. Nor would you find actual fossilized microbes, however carefully you searched. Any simple organisms, alas, would have been baked away by the processes that turned ocean mud to stone. Instead, what we would see if we crunched up the rock and examined it microscopically would be the chemical residues that the organisms left behind, carbon isotopes, and a type of phosphate called apatite, which together provide strong evidence that the rock once contained colonies of living things. We can only guess what the organism might have looked like, Bennett said. It was probably about as basic as life can get, but it was life nonetheless. It lived. It propagated. And eventually, it led to us. If you're into very old rocks, and Bennett indubitably is, the ANU has long been a prime place to be. This is largely thanks to the ingenuity of a man named Bill Compston, who is now retired, but in the 1970s built the world's first sensitive high-resolution ion microprobe, or SHRIMP, as it is more affectionately known from its initial letters. This is a machine that measures the decay rate of uranium in tiny minerals called zircons. Zircons appear in most rocks apart from basalts and are extremely durable, surviving every natural process but subduction. Most of the Earth's crust has been slipped back into the oven at some point, but just occasionally, in Western Australia and Greenland, for example, geologists have found outcrops of rocks that have remained always at the surface. Compston's machine allowed such rocks to be dated with unparalleled precision. The prototype SHRIMP was built and machined in the Earth Science Department's own workshops and looked like something that had been built from spare parts on a budget, but it worked great. On its first formal test in 1982, it dated the oldest thing ever found, a 4.3 billion-year-old rock from Western Australia. It caused quite a stir at the time, Bennett told me, to find something so important so quickly with brand new technology. She took me down the hall to see the current model, SHRIMP 2. It was a big, heavy piece of stainless steel apparatus, perhaps 12 feet long and 5 feet high, and as solidly built as a deep-sea probe. At a console in front of it, keeping an eye on ever-changing strings of figures on a screen, was a man named Bob from Canterbury University in New Zealand. He had been there since 4 a.m., he told me. Shrimp 2 runs 24 hours a day. There's that many rocks to date. It was just after 9 a.m. and Bob had the machine till noon. Ask a pair of geochemists how something like this works, and they will start talking about isotopic abundances and ionization levels with an enthusiasm that is more endearing than fathomable. The upshot of it, however, was that the machine, by bombarding a sample of rock with streams of charged atoms, is able to detect subtle differences in the amounts of lead and uranium in the zircon samples, by which means the age of rocks can be accurately adduced. Bob told me that it takes about 17 minutes to read one zircon, and it is necessary to read dozens from each rock to make the data reliable. In practice, the process seemed to involve about the same level of scattered activity and about as much stimulation as a trip to a laundromat. Bob seemed very happy, however, but then people from New Zealand very generally do. The Earth Sciences compound was an odd combination of things, part offices, part labs, part machine shed. "We used to build everything here," Bennett said. "We even had our own glassblower, but he's retired. But we still have two full-time rock crushers." She caught my look of mild surprise. "We get through a lot of rocks, and they have to be very carefully prepared. You have to make sure there is no contamination from previous samples, no dust or anything. It's quite a meticulous process." She showed me the rock-crushing machines, which were indeed pristine, though the rock crushers had apparently gone for coffee. Beside the machines were large boxes containing rocks of all shapes and sizes. They do indeed get through a lot of rocks at the ANU. Back in Bennett's office after our tour, I noticed hanging on her wall a poster giving an artist's colorfully imaginative interpretation of Earth as it might have looked 3.5 billion years ago, just when life was getting going, in the ancient period known to Earth science as the Archean. The poster showed an alien landscape of huge, very active volcanoes and a steamy, copper-colored sea.